Welcome to Energy in Action. I'm your host, Marcy Young, and as a Mito patient myself, I appreciate you and the community you've helped us to build. This podcast honors the triumphs and struggles of patients and families affected by this disease and celebrates the work being done by doctors and researchers every day to make it a safer world for our people. We are a support group and a podcast focusing on all things related to mitochondrial disease. Welcome to another episode of Energy in Action. And today I am joined by two women who you have heard from before. They've both been guests on our show, April and Jen. And together they are coming on to talk today about having a service dog and how important and beneficial it has been to their lives. So April, Jen, welcome both of you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
I've been really looking forward to this because I feel like, you know, we see each other, you know, through other Mito Action support groups. And then we both worked together on a podcast. And so bringing you guys both back seemed like just such a logical, easy, comfortable thing to do. So I think the best place to start is, I'm guessing our listeners would love to hear about the journey of you and your dogs coming together. How did it happen? Paint us that picture.
So it's something that we had discussed for, you know, a year or two that we knew was going to kind of be in the future looking. You know, I had gone through the list of things that I did and didn't want in a, you know, dog when I was looking for the breed that I would need. You know, I do spend a lot of time in the hospital, so I did want something that, you know, was non-shedding, hypoallergenic, along those lines as well. So ultimately, I ended up settling on, you know, and deciding a standard poodle would be the best for my needs. And it was kind of a process of, you know, we knew that eventually we would find the right one, you know, when it's right, you know, when it's not. We had kind of looked around here and there, nothing, you know, ever really kind of stuck out. And one day we happened to, you know, find Lexi's litter was available. So we were out and about and decided to, you know, my wife was like, let's just go look. And I'm like, no, it's not the right time, you know, not the day. And she's like, I just have a feeling, let's just go look. So we went and to see, you know, her litter, her breeder. They were great people, great family, and kind of what we needed as far as the home environment was concerned. With all of my medical needs, all of my equipment, all of the things, we do have other dogs that, and, you know, they're very finicky on the different smells of the medicines or the IV pole or the equipment. And we kind of needed to really start from the ground up and make sure that whatever dog we ultimately chose was going to literally be accustomed to any and everything that was thrown at them. And so the home environment was good to start with. It was like the perfect scenario. And so, you know, we were looking at these dogs and my wife spotted her and picked her up and handed her to me. And she's like, this is the one. And I was like, that's funny. Like, yeah, I don't think so. And I put her on my chest and my port was accessed and she kind of looked at it. And then later had on my chest and just didn't move. And I was like, oh, okay, that's nice. And then my wife was like, here, hold this one. And she handed it to me and it was nuts. And I was like, okay, not happening. And I put it down. And then Lexi was just still sitting there and I picked her back up. And she just laid there with her head rested on my port for like 2 hours while they were just chit-chatting. And I was like, you're right. This is the one. Like, I can feel it. Like, I know this is the one. So, I mean, that's how I ultimately ended up getting her. I just knew at that moment. And like I said, we had looked at many other dogs over time and kind of here and there and just nothing was ever right. But I knew this one was right.
She showed you from the onset that she was going to take good care of you and respect what's around you and your equipment, and that's so lovely. And the connection, I'm sure, has grown from there. And
We'll get to hear about that. April, tell us about you and your dog.
So I initially wanted a service dog, I think about 6 years prior to my getting her, just even before I got diagnosed with mitochondrial disease, but I had been in the diagnostic journey for about 5 years. So maybe it was about 2 or 3 years in, you know, and I kind of was realizing this is going to be like a chronic thing. And, you know, and I just started to daydream about like, well, I think it would be really great and helpful for my life to have a service dog. So, you know, there was a lot of contemplation, a lot of like time and research prior to actually getting her, which is good. I'm glad I did that. I looked into different organizations that provide service dogs, but also I'm glad that it took so long for me to get to the process, because during those years that passed, my asthma continued to get worse to the point where I actually sadly had to rehome one of my cats that had hair. So after that happened, I became worried about adopting from one of the organizations because they only offered dogs that were golden retrievers or labs. And I had started to have a little bit of issues with typical fur dogs as well. So just like Jaren, I also went the path of, okay, I need hypoallergenic. It's going to have to be hypoallergenic. But ironically, at first, I didn't want a standard poodle. And I'm glad to have this opportunity to kind of share this with people, because I wished, you know, I wish more people would know this, because I had an image in my head of like standard poodle and the poodle haircut, and that it just looks funny and fluffy and their noses look all weird and long. And a friend of mine, she had a best friend from college that was breeding standard poodles. And she's like, you know, it's just a haircut. The doodles just do a different haircut. You can do the same haircut that people do on doodle mixes with a standard poodle. I'm like, really? So then she started showing me photos. I'm like, oh, they are cute. Okay. Yeah. So it's really just all like golden doodles and Labrador. They're all just haircuts. Otherwise, a standard poodle can look the same way. So anyway, once I realized that, then I got out of the doodle sphere, which, you know, nothing against people that do the mixes. But as I learned and researched more, I realized I didn't want a mix, because if you got a purebred, you were guaranteed they were going to be hypoallergenic. When you start mixing the golden and the lab and with the poodles, come to find out a lot of them can actually shed quite a bit and be very allergenic. So I'm glad I went, you know, with the purebred. Also, you can better predict personality and temperament going with a purebred dog.
Very good advice. Thank you. I'm going to share these nuggets of wisdom with our audience. So thank you.
Yeah, apparently some of the doodle mixes can have some pretty big like behavior issues, because you're trying to mix two really different personality dogs together, and that can be problematic. And sometimes the hair mixture becomes really problematic, I guess. Some hairs try to be curly and some trying to be straight all in the same dog. And apparently I've heard from groomer friends that like some of these doodles can really be grooming nightmares, you know. So, and also I was shocked that the cost of the mixed breed poodle doodle mixes were like 2 or 3 times more expensive than a purebred standard poodle.
Isn't that crazy?
That's another factor.
I've seen that too. Yeah.
Yeah. So once I got in this lane of like, okay, it's going to be a standard poodle, you know. Another thing that I'm glad that I took into consideration before I adopted her, my dog's name is Bailey, by the way. Initially, because I have, you know, muscle weakness, energy limitations, I was thinking a doodle mix more around 30, 35 pounds might be better suited for me. You know, I was thinking a little bit smaller maybe would be better. And in some ways, I think, you know, that still holds true. But when I was speaking with the breeder of the standard poodles, she had a really good point that she said, you know, if your illness is progressive, she's like, you might want a bigger dog. You may eventually need help walking. And at this time, I wasn't that affected with mitochondrial disease. And I just was like, wow, maybe, you know, maybe. So I ended up moving forward with the standard poodle with this breeder that was a friend of a friend of mine. And yeah, I'm so glad I did, because now she's 65 pounds and I do have trouble walking, and she has a walking harness with an extended handle. And now she helps me a lot with mobility stuff. So yeah, so it was a great choice for me. And I ended up adopting her from the West Coast, from California. This is, you know, just because my friend knew her, so I felt I could trust this breeder. So, you know, I just felt that was better than a local breeder that I didn't know. But she sent me lots of videos. And for me, you know, just like Jen, it was like, it was immediate when I saw Bailey on the video. She was the only girl. There was a litter of 7 or 8. And the boys were just psycho. They're just hyper and they're just all over the place. And Bailey was just like quiet in the back and just kind of watching things and just much more mild. And I was like, yep, she's the one. That little girl's the one.
Oh, you both have such beautiful stories of coming together. And I think our listeners should really know that you both did the training on your own. Let's walk through that process and let's talk about the training. And then if you had to do it again, would you? Would you do that training on your own again? Jen, would you like to start us off?
So yes and no, as far as that's concerned. We did do some of the basic stuff, like through like trainers and stuff. Not that it was kind of a waste of my time and money, though, because when I took her to the basic classes, it was all stuff she was just kind of like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, and the other people like felt so bad. We thought they weren't going to come back because they were like, wow, our dog doesn't know how to do this. Like, and, you know, and we were just like, don't pay any attention to that. Like, we kind of were put in this class because she wasn't ready for the one class because of her age, but she kind of already knows all this stuff, you know? And so, because I did want to make sure that we did have some, you know, guidance as far as that was concerned. But from the moment I brought her home, her and I would sit and watch somebody on YouTube, my service dog and me. She is excellent. And like her insight was just amazing. Like stuff I wouldn't have even thought of, you know, things that I, you know, didn't realize. Like when you're training a service dog, when you are going to have a service dog, things that are important, like they have to be able to, you know, use the bathroom on different types of surfaces because it's not always going to be a backyard. Like, or they have to know that walking on a metal ramp or, you know, through an automatic door or a handicap door is okay. It's not a scary thing. Like, these are all things that you don't really think of that your dog's going to be exposed to. And literally, I realized at that moment that Lexi would have to be accustomed to literally. So for me, like training her to basically just experience every little noise and thing that life had to offer was important. Like when they come from places, they do get, you know, a certain level of training, but it wouldn't be specific to what's going on in my house. Like wouldn't be specific to my IV pole and my equipment and my CPAP and my needles. And, you know, we have one of our rescue dogs, like he gets freaked out when he sees, you know, my shots and, you know, I can't have that. Like, you know, Lexi goes to the lab. She's been in the ICU with me. She stays in the hospital with me. And nothing that they do scares her. Like nothing, there's no smells, there's no sounds, there's no equipment that even phases her. And that's what I needed. So for me, I would have to have the training mostly done here myself at home because there's so many variables and it's so important that whatever dog is part of my medical team is going to be okay with every medical scenario that happens in our life every day.
I've just learned so much from you, Jen. You're totally right. From my estimation, it's like I would want it done in quotes, you know, the right way, but that's not the same for any two people, especially, you know, those with rare disease. And so even just with the two of you, you know, April, your needs from Bailey And Jen, your needs from Lexi are completely different. Well, maybe not complete, but very different, we'll say. And so the idea of training him or her yourself really does make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, like, so from the very start, like when she came home, like my plasma infusions, for example, like I do those weekly and I would say, all right, we're going to go to work now. And, you know, because I do it at night and, you know, pull all of the things out and I would have her smell it, or my insulin. I'd say, here's my insulin, and I'd have her smell it. So she knew the smell, you know, same thing with different IV meds. Like I'd pull it out and be like, all right, this is whatever, and show it to her and have her smell it again. So she was familiar with all of those smells and all of those different things so that nothing, like I said, would throw her off ever, because it's just so important.
April, do you, I've seen you nodding your head here and there. Do you feel pretty similarly to the way Jen describes the training? Tell me about how the training was with Bailey.
Actually, I mean, I'm torn on, I feel like I could not recommend one way over another. I think it's really just going to be dependent on that person's current situation and go with what feels right to you, I guess. Because on one hand, everything Jen just said, I'm yes, nodding in agreement, because I'm like, yes, this, you know, that was very good that Bailey was with me from 8 weeks old. And she now, everything that we do, it's just second nature to her. Even when I was a couple of years ago, prior to getting on the clinical trial meds, now I'm walking a lot and don't use my power wheelchair much. Yes, which is great. But a couple of years ago when I was really bad, I was using the power wheelchair a lot. That was the only way I could even walk Bailey anymore. And so it was great that Bailey just, no problems with the power wheelchair, not afraid of it at all, you know, because she just got around it, you know, from a young age, whereas other things in the neighborhood she's like freaked out by, you know. So I see big benefits to it, but also I see the drawback that in a huge way Jen and I got lucky, you know, getting the right dogs. But I've also heard of many people in our community who tried this and tried to raise a service dog on their own, and it wasn't the right type of dog to be a service dog, and it just didn't work. So then they end up with a great family pet, great, but it wasn't, you know, the mission that was started out with. And I will say Bailey is 90% amazing as a service dog, but she has too much anxiety. So if she would have been put into like one of the training centers for service dogs, she would have failed out because of her anxiety. And it does honestly make my life a little bit more challenging with her, because her anxiety is calmed by me. So I can't ever leave her, which is okay, because thank goodness she is my service dog and I usually want her with me anyway. But yeah, it's been challenging that sometimes I need to just go out, you know, for a certain medical test or something. Like, for example, last year I had to get a mammogram and I had to figure out like, well, where does Bailey go, you know, while I'm getting the mammogram, like, because I legit can't leave her home ever because her anxiety is so high. You know, so that's just a couple things for people to think about. You know, some people's dogs failed and didn't make it at all to be a service dog when they tried to do it themselves. And for me, you know, I ended up with a dog whose temperament wasn't quite exactly right for it. Thank goodness she, like I said, she's perfect in like 90% of the ways. So we manage around it. Yeah, so it's just what works for you, you know, and thinking forward to the future. You know, Bailey's 6 and a half now, so I'm hoping she's got another like 10 years in her. This is great. You know, won't be able to be service dog that long, you know, but yeah. I'm thinking to the future. And I think next time I will just have to find an organization that does work with hypoallergenic dogs.
Yeah.
Because my condition's so progressed now that my driving abilities is very poor. And, you know, being able to go to the puppy classes and stuff would be really difficult. And like Jen said, she felt like that was kind of a waste of time or money. But for some dogs, when they're very, like those first beginning, you know, year of life, it is very important to do those socialization with other dogs, you know, and get them out of the house a lot is huge for most of them. That's part of what they do at these centers, is just lots of socialization, lots of, I just wouldn't have the ability to do that anymore. So, you know, people just have to figure out what's right for them, for their time, energy, finances.
Right. I mean, there's some people out there that, as you said, might not be able to afford a company to train them. But then for some people listening, I mean, the idea of training a service dog might be so overwhelming. I mean, you both seem like you're pretty familiar with animals. You had had pets before, but there's going to be people in our mitochondrial community that have never had a dog and didn't ever think it was for them until the service animal conversation came to be, you know? So there's definitely a lot to consider.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, I had been a dog owner basically my entire life. I grew up with a dog since I was three, and I work in the animal field. So I'm very, very knowledgeable. So I felt confident in doing this with her. But the other thing I want to point out is the organizations that I was looking into, at least in my area, this was back when I lived in Florida, but they did offer the service dogs for free to people who qualified. So that's also a huge consideration, because when you do it yourself, you know, I had to pay $1,800 for the dog. I got her from California. I had to pay to fly her to me. I had to pay for all those initial, you know, puppy classes and advanced classes, whatever. That was like $1,000 in training. It was actually way more expensive to go that way.
April, tell me about some of the most helpful tasks that Bailey does for you right now.
Okay, well, I would say number one most helpful is the walking stability help. Last year, I applied for a grant and I got a beautiful harness. The company is called Gold Lead Harnesses, I believe. And yeah, it's great. The company's so great. You just take measurements of your dog, all different, you know, around the neck and the girth and the chest and all this. And they make a harness, you know, it's custom fitted to them. And you measure your arm and your hand so they can make you a handle. And that has helped so much, because prior to that, when I was in that situation, not bad enough to need the wheelchair, but not still walking completely well, just on my own two feet, I would be out with Bailey and I'm using my walker. And so trying to like get through a door somewhere with my walker and the dog was just quite difficult, you know. So this harness with her has alleviated having to have, you know, that extra piece of equipment with me. Now it's just Bailey by my side and I'm holding on to the walking handle. So that's great. Of course, it doesn't replace, you know, as much stability as the walker, because it's only on one side of me. But for most days for me now, that works really well. A lot of times now I have enough strength to do the walking. I'm just, my neurological system is the worst hit for my mito. So I'm just a little wobbly, and just the security of holding on to that little handle on her harness, just it's been such a godsend for me. So that's the number one thing right now. But also, I've trained her to do grounding for me, where if I'm sitting down, she knows I can give her the signal to come and lay across my legs, or if I'm lying down, to come lay across my chest. So this has helped a few times. When I had muscle pain really badly in my legs, she laid across my legs, and that really can help with the muscle pain, or if you're having spasms. But one of the best times that she practiced this was when I had to go to the hospital a couple of years ago for some breathing issues, and they gave me a steroid, of course, to open things up and help you breathe really fast. But even though I warned them, like, give me the baby dose, and they did. They said they legit gave me, like, a baby dose, but my body's so sensitive. So I just started trembling and just shaking all over. And, you know, so that was, of course, highly uncomfortable, but also I was worried about how much energy that was draining from my body due to all that shaking. So to be able to have Bailey up on the ER bed laying across me, it really helped stabilize and minimize some of the shaking. And I think that helped a lot. And then I have chronic PTSD, CPTSD. I don't know, most people aren't familiar with that term. So that's not from like a one-time big traumatic event. It's from this. It's from 15 years of living with a very challenging traumatic health disease. And so I deal with a lot of really severe anxiety and like anxiety attacks, panic attacks, whatever. And Bailey's super helpful with that, being able to ground me, either lay across my legs or lay across my chest. But it's basically, she's like a weighted blanket for me, you know, or they sell now like weighted stuffed animals like that, you know. It just, so those are the three main things. And yeah, it's very, very helpful.
Those are all really big things. She really aids in the success of your life. It is so wonderful to see. Jen, can you tell us about the tasks that are most helpful that Lexi does for you on a regular basis?
Yeah. So basically, like, my goal for her, first of all, with service dogs, they're pretty much training their whole lives. So my goal for her, end goal for her, is that she's going to be able to do everything from opening cabinets, handicap doors, you name it. But as things have come up, I'm like, oh, this would be a good task we need to work on next. So like, I, you know, break bones by just bending over and my ribs just snap. And so in July, when I had, you know, displaced and broken five ribs just getting string cheese from the fridge, I was like, all right, I'm not going to break by picking up a pen anymore. So I was like, all right, next task is going to be that she is going to pick things up off the floor. So start to finish, literally, she had that down in 5 days. And now, but she'll do it for anybody. So like, my daughter dropped something the other day and she comes over and picks it up and hands it to her. Like, so that has been a huge thing because, you know, that saves a lot on me potentially face planting or, you know, breaking by bending over. But the fact that she can, you know, I don't know how, because it's not something we trained for, because it wasn't something that, I mean, it was something that, yes, ideally I'd like, but she can detect when my lactic acid is too high, like higher than my baseline high. And she gets very antsy and she will relentlessly alert me. We didn't realize it was lactic until, gosh, I mean, she was pretty young when she first did it. And I was like, wow, this is kind of bizarre. So now,
and you had no clue that level was high on your own.
Not above my, no, I knew I was not well, and I didn't know, just couldn't quite pinpoint what was going on with me that night. And so then we realized, you know, it was that, and she's been doing it ever since. But also the fact that, I mean, on three occasions, I literally went to the hospital because of her, because
she alerted you of something.
Correct. Now we jokingly call her the blood sniffing dog, because when I first got her, I was hospitalized right after, and I came home and I had a peripheral clot, like in the, where the peripheral line was in my arm. And we knew it was there, but she was only barely 9 weeks old. And I picked her up and she immediately pressed her nose into it and just held it there. And I said, wow, she can smell that. I said, that is so bizarre. And then in August, I had been sick for weeks. ID was trying to figure out what was going on. I was just having so many issues. I was on IV antibiotics. We were doing labs. We were kind of grasping at straws. And she was very antsy one day, and she had pressed her nose into my neck. She got up on the bed and she pressed her nose into my neck, like right deep into my neck, and just held it there. And I said, okay, whatever's going on. I looked at my wife. I said, whatever's going on, something's wrong with my port. I said, I don't know what, I don't know why, I don't know what's going on. But this was a Sunday. And I said, I think we should go on, because we were going to try to wait till Monday. And we went to the hospital. Sure enough, not only was it infected, but I had a blood clot in the jugular, right where she was pushing her nose in. And my port had to be pulled the next morning. And I was like, oh my God, she literally saved my life. Like, because I mean, I literally looked at my wife. I said, she's done this once before. And I said, I don't know what's going on, but we need to figure it out. Same thing with, you know, I was discharged, came home. I was having more problems. She was like just relentless. We went back. I still had, you know, infection we were dealing with. Then I had a new port placed And I came home from the procedure. Every time I'd fall asleep, she just kept waking me up, waking me up, waking me up. And I said to my wife, I said, man, she will not let me sleep. Like, something is wrong. And my lungs were kind of bad. And I said, I don't know what's going on. And I said, but she's not been wrong before. We need to go get it checked. So we went back to the hospital. And sure enough, I was admitted. I had pneumonia. And so I said, well, at this point, I just need to just listen to what she tells me. Wow. Because she's not been wrong yet.
That's incredible.
And recently when I have a clot with the new port, but it's a different kind of clot, more like a scar tissue kind of thing. And I said, Lexi, like, look at my neck, like, smell my neck. Like, do I need to be concerned here? Because I'm thinking, you know, this is probably not the same scenario. And she wasn't really engaged in it. Like, she was just like, yeah, you're fine. You know, and I was like, all right, I trust that this is okay, you know, because she's not been wrong yet. And sure enough, once again, this just wasn't one that I needed to be concerned about. Like, it wasn't a port pole, you know, disaster kind of thing. Like, it was okay. So I was like, I trust my dog at this point because she seems to know before anybody else knows.
You have the most genuine trust in that dog. I feel like we need to have a disclaimer, like, this may not happen with any other service animal.
She just knew. Like, I mean, and that was the thing. Like, that day in August, I looked at my wife. I said, something's wrong. I don't know what, but something's wrong. I said, she literally threw herself back on me and pressed her nose into my neck and just held it there. And I said, something's not right.
Wow. Talk about a crazy bond. I really can't. There are no words.
That's something that I just don't feel like you could train. Like, you can train them to do things like sugar and heart rate and stuff like that. You can, but I do think there has to be a natural ability there as well. Because like I said, with the lactic and with the blood clots, I mean, she's not been wrong yet. And it's not something that we trained. Like, you know, it's something I wanted her to know, but it's just not something that we had done. It just was there.
That's crazy. It's like innate in her to want to, you know, better your life and to keep you here. It's beautiful, really. Now, Jen, how do you separate Lexi from the other dogs in your house? Like, how do they understand that they're not responsible for the things that Lexi is responsible for?
So she kind of has like a different lifestyle per se. Like,
her sounds like it.
Yeah. So like, we put a gate up in the hallway outside of my room. She spends, you know, I'd say most days she spends probably 85% of her day with me one-on-one in the room, whether it be here, out, wherever. She does get her playtime. She does get her off days. Like, if we've had a particularly stressful, you know, long couple of days or whatever, you know, I'll be like, listen, you've just go play for the day. Like, you know, because she loves to just go play. And because we ultimately now have her full-blooded sister and from a different litter, who, by the way, disclaimer, is not Lexi. She is nuts. And I honestly have a hard time liking her, to be perfectly frank.
What is her name?
Her name is Sloan, but let me tell you, they are not cut from the same cloth. And so that was my wife's doings, because she was like, wow, Lexi really made me a poodle person. But it would have to be her same DNA, and they were going to have one more litter. And yeah, DNA or not, they are not the same.
Well, think about siblings, you know, and how many cases, you know, they're not that similar and not seeming like they're cut from the same cloth.
True story. They are not. She does like to play with her sister, and go nuts. So she does get her time like outside when they go outside every day. But
and Lexi can differentiate that.
Yes.
Wow.
And then when they come in, you know, Lexi will come into the room. The rest will go out, you know, to the living room. So they are segregated as far as Lexi spends most of her time one-on-one with me, working, getting to know me, you know, my senses and everything that's going on with me and all of that. So she does have that time, but to be a dog and to be a puppy and all of those good things. But she also does have her, most of her time is working and spent separated from everybody.
So now switching gears a little bit, and this is a conversation the three of us have had in the past. Tell our listeners a bit about the pushback that you have gotten in the everyday world, you know, being out with your dogs. What has that been like? April, tell us, start us off with that one.
I haven't had many issues, thankfully. So
thankfully, yes.
I'll put that out there right away.
Yeah.
However, I moved into this aware of that and anticipating that. So that would be my advice to people is just to know that just like every day, everywhere we interact with a rare invisible illness,
mm-hmm.
we have to become advocates whether we want to or not. Uh-huh. And it's the same thing when you are a service dog handler. Your job now out in the world, you know, we all wish it wouldn't have to be this way. I wish, you know, I could just be doing my thing and everybody understands what it is and how to, you know, function with somebody with a service dog, but they don't. So one incident actually did happen at a medical office, which of course is the most frustrating of all the incidences because you'd wish
seems
that all
like
medical
the easiest
offices,
place to bring Bailey.
Right, would be aware, but this particular office was not. It was in an area where it was a very bougie area, like a very, very wealthy area of town where I had to have this medical appointment. And I don't know. So I just think that the staff and people there were just not as welcoming, I guess, to this idea for whatever reason. But yeah, so the doctor himself said to me something to the effect of, you need to show me her registration or her, you know, ID card or whatnot. And I remember just saying, like, there's no such thing. Like, there's no registration program for service dogs or ID cards, you know. So in that moment, I did get upset, you know, and kind of frustrated by the situation. But I'm really glad that I made sure I took the time to be knowledgeable beforehand. So that's the big thing I would say is make sure you know the laws in and out, the ADA laws around service dogs, so that you know exactly how to handle these situations. In that moment, I didn't have anything except what was in my brain. But then after that incident, when I came back to the office the second time, I printed out pages from the ADA website about service dogs and I highlighted it. I made two copies so that the doctor could have a copy, the front desk could have a copy because they weren't aware either. And that was helpful. And since then, I've graduated that and someone recommended to me, I think might have been Jen actually, there's actual little index cards that you can bring with you that just has the ADA laws about a service dog. So if somebody's questioning it at an establishment, you can just hand the card and say, here's the laws around a service dog, what you're allowed to ask me and such like that. You know, and then there's been a lot of other little incidents. Like one time I basically got stopped at the very front of walking into a coffee shop and they're like, we don't allow dogs sitting here, you know, and I'm like, this is my service dog. And same thing, like, do you have proof? And so I had to educate them. And, you know, it's just uncomfortable because now there's people behind me waiting to get in. And, you know, now everybody's looking at you. And, you know, so there's moments it's not great. Just last weekend, in fact, I somehow felt well enough to go out at like 9 o'clock to this local restaurant that also has a bar. And we were just going to hang out in the hotel. It's in a hotel, in the hotel lobby. And so I'm standing there waiting for my partner to like bring drinks and, you know, just all these people coming over and, oh, what a cute dog, you know, and then the one lady just like very dramatically, just kind of in a really loud voice is like, how are you allowed to bring her in here? You know, and that kind of thing.
And how are you so ignorant?
Yeah. So just have to always be educating.
Yeah.
I do notice it's a lot easier. I get a lot less friction when I'm using the walking harness with Bailey. It's a lot more obvious. She has the rigid harness with the handle and I'm holding, but I don't always need the walking harness. You know, sometimes I'm walking just that night. I was just fine on my own 2 feet and the walking harness is not super comfortable for Bailey. So I choose to not use that when I don't need it for, you know, for my own comfortability and my dog's comfortability. But I do know when I don't use that harness, I am more at risk for people not immediately understanding or as easily understanding, oh, this is a service dog. So, yeah, you know, and I'm just out there trying to educate people on it. You know, I see a lot of parents are doing very well, I think, with their children. You know, right away, they're like, no, that's a service dog. Don't go touch it. Don't pet it, you know. So it's good to see the response when people are educated on it.
Yeah, I'm sure that feels more comfortable to you, obviously. Jen, have you had anything that's happened to you while you've been out with Lexi?
So we had one incident at a doctor's office.
Again at a doctor's office?
Yeah, so the and a major company like that, when you look at their policy on their website, like for all of their locations, like it's crystal clear. And so, but this particular smaller office, you know, it had some issues with other things with the staff before. So just giving us a hard time from time to time, but the doctor knew that she was coming with me that day. It was her first time coming. And so, you know, there shouldn't have been an issue. Immediately, the waiting room was lap full. And so that just made it even more horrifying. And, you know, the lady at the front, you know, demanding paperwork and registration and all this stuff. And I said, you know, do I have something? Yeah, I do, but I don't have to have it. Like, that's not required. Like, my wife was trying to handle the situation and she's like, apparently you're not familiar with the laws. And again, waiting room full of people. Then I needed to go back to the lab and she was like, well, we just, you know, you have to understand, we can't just have people bring their dogs in here. And I'm like, listen, like, this isn't a Chihuahua that's in here to make me feel better about myself. Like, she is now a part of my medical team who's going to be opening doors and retrieving things as I end up in a wheelchair and, you know, am losing the ability to walk. And these are the things she's going to be doing. And yes, I understand I've been coming here for 10 years and didn't have a dog with me. But now, unfortunately, this is a part of my journey. This is a part of my process. So from this point forward, she is now a part of my medical team. So, and that is the way I refer to her because, you know, same thing with when I'm in the hospital, like if, you know, everybody comes in and they all just, they're dying to pet her. Like I had an attending physician literally carry a treat around in her lab coat all day waiting to come to my room. And I always tell them, like, I know people have different opinions on different things, but I always let my medical team pet her because I'm like, she is just as much a part of my medical team as you are. Like, you guys are all working together. She's keeping me safe. She's working her job, you know, to take care of me as you are as well. So I'm okay with that. But yeah, I was kind of horrified. And that was really the only time I've ever really encountered an issue. When we've gone to, like, say, a restaurant, like, I've had, you know, people at, like, maybe a table over, like, oh my God, there's a dog. Like, okay, well, she literally just went under the table and laid down like she's supposed to. You don't even know she's here. You know, she's not at your table. Like, begging for your food. Again, I try to be respectful of the fact that it's not everybody's, you know, area. And so I always try to request, you know, that we sit to the side. If I can call ahead, I'll call ahead and say, do you have an area that's maybe in a corner for us kind of thing? Not that I have to, but again, just because I want to be respectful as well of what other people are feeling too, you know? But other than that, I've never, I mean, even at the hospital, she has her own fan club. When I'm telling you, when I was in ICU in October, they were so excited. They were like, we never get dogs. We're so excited to have a dog. Like, they just, they've always been really good. We've had one security guard that, I don't know, asks weird questions and doesn't really know his job, I think. But for the most part, everybody else at like the main hospital we use, they're great. They're really good with her and they like having her. So yeah, I mean, we've been pretty fortunate. When I'm out in public, I don't, you know, I expect that parents keep their kids, you know, back. Don't, you know, that people ask if they're wanting to pet her or respect the fact that they can't, that sort of thing. Because no, when I'm out, like, at the store, I don't want people coming up and bothering her, like, or distracting her. That's a whole different scenario, you know? But for the most part, like, when we're at the hospital, I can't tell you how many times a day, like, I mean, probably at least 15 times a day, somebody will come in and not even know she's there because she's so still in my bed that she'll kind of shift and they're like, oh my God, there's a dog there. I thought it was a blanket. Like, not even a clue that she's there. And that's what she should do. Like, she should not, you know, make a spectacle of herself and be like, hey, I'm here. You know, my other dogs would be like, hey, pet me. But she just, again, naturally doesn't. She just naturally doesn't want to engage unless, you know, it's offered kind of thing. So we haven't had a whole lot of like pushback other than that one scenario. But again, she, you know, minds her P's and Q's when we're out, which is important because they have to be under control.
So I know you both are very bonded to your dogs. April, do you have any stories that you would want to share with us about when you first felt that true connection with Bailey, like once Bailey was here?
With her, it was more gradual, actually. It wasn't like immediate when she was a puppy, which I hoped it would have been. Like, I'll never forget having this big anticipation because she flew in, you know, and my ex at the time had gone and gotten her from the airport because I wasn't feeling well. And then, like, was walking up to the door with the dog, and I just expected, like, to go Bailey and have her like run into my arms, but it didn't happen. Bailey just stood there staring at me like, who are you, crazy lady? And I'm scared, you know? So yeah, Bailey she just took a while to kind of, you know, get accustomed to her environment and to me. And I don't know, every dog's different, but I do think that for a lot of dogs, when they're like under 2 years old, I mean, they're just puppies. And so it's just all about, you know, getting into things and chewing things and kind of a mess. So I remember actually distinctly this point in time when she was maybe around a year and a half, and I was actually really starting to doubt, what was this? Was this a good decision? Was this the right decision? Because I wasn't feeling a whole lot of bond there, you know, as I'm struggling to like do something and she's over here just pulling on the leash and just like being a mess. You know, so I don't know. Little word of wisdom for people. Sometimes it can take time for a dog to grow into themselves and settle in. And so then it just was a gradual thing. It was like little moments here, little moments there, where I started to be like, oh, look, like she paid attention to me more. Oh, she's looking at me when I was just doing this thing, and I turn around and she's looking at me, you know, and it just more and more that built. And now it's to the point where, I mean, she's all about me. Like, I cannot move from room to room in the house without her following me, not only watching me, but getting up and following me all around the house all the time. You know, so the bond has been very strong. She's very aware of me constantly. Very, very, very rarely am I in a room and she's not right there with me. You know, even at home when I'm just like, you know, do your thing. I don't really need a service dog at this moment. But like right now, she's right behind me, like 3 feet away.
So I do think that's important for our listeners to hear, because they're right now today, they're hearing from both of you women with your astounding stories of these great dogs and all this wonderful connection. But it is important to hear that it doesn't just happen on day one, you know, and that connection can build and you can have this amazing relationship, even if it doesn't start out feeling just like this.
Yeah. For me, it wasn't right away. And also my big piece of advice, if you're going to, well, whether you're training the dog yourself or you get them from an organization and bring them in, it's very important for at least the first month or so for anyone else in the family to be super hands off with the dog. And we made that mistake in the beginning, and that was part of the difficulty of really getting Bailey to focus on me and bond with me better, because we allowed other people in the household to play with her too much and be too hands on. It needs to really just be it's kind of sad because it's a dog, a puppy, you know, everybody wants to be all good, but everybody else in the household really needs to just kind of ignore the dog, at least in the beginning, until that initial bond between the person and the service dog's formed, then other people can be more interactive.
That's really interesting. But I'm sure it is very hard for anyone else to ignore such a cute little thing. Now, Jen, I know you've had such a tragic year. How has Lexi been for you during these last couple months?
Yeah, so it definitely has been. And I'll tell you too, like with her, like, I mean, she has dealt with the same trauma. You know, we tragically lost my wife in September, and she, you know, has been through the exact same trauma that we all have. I mean, she obviously was there the night, you know, we had to go, you know, sit with my wife's body and hear the doctors tell me, you know, the things, and go to the funeral home and do all the really hard stuff. And, you know, it was an accident. So then, you know, Lexi had to, you know, go with me to the tow yard, to the car. And so it was a rough, several weeks of some really hard, hard stuff. And I actually ended up giving her a lot of time off after. She didn't do a whole lot of anything as far as appointments and different things. Like, she spent more time just kind of collecting herself, because emotionally it was a lot for her. And I mean, it was some heavy stuff, and she knew. And, you know, my son was in the accident at a different hospital. And when we got there to him, the relief on her face after being with my wife at the previous hospital, when she saw him, was there was just, I mean, it was just insane. Like, she had just such an amount of relief because she knew he was with her. And so then I found, you know, she was in his hospital bed. And so, you know, we've definitely learned a lot over the last few months. And it has been a very trying time with a lot of trauma for all of us. But Lexi has come through it like a rock star. And I don't think I could have done any of it without her. That's for sure. But it has made her definitely more aware of like the rest of the pack. Like, everybody stays pretty hands off with her, but it's bizarre because she does know the difference in me and everybody else. Like, with me, she's not like your affectionate dog that wants to like lick you and love you and stuff. And I always kind of feel bad. I'm like, Lexi, where's my lovin's? Like, you work for me. Like, you don't want to give me that. But I'm telling you, my son walks in the room And she jumps up and puts her paws on his shoulder to give him a hug. And I'm like, why don't I get hugs? Because she knows mom will fall over and probably break something. So she's not going to do that to me. But she knows the difference. But it's made her, like I said, more aware of kind of everybody in the family. But again, her whole demeanor towards me is completely and totally different. And sometimes that does make me feel bad. Because I'll be like, wow, she's just so professional. Like, she doesn't even want to come snuggle with me. I have to, like, beg her at night. I'll be like, come here. Come close. And, you know, but I'm telling you, the kid walks in and she's like, oh, my gosh, my kid's here. Like, thank God, you know. So, yeah.
She's definitely a part of your family.
Yes, definitely.
Well, Jen, I'm so sorry that you've gone through so much this year, and hopefully Lexi has been a bit of a bright light for you, you know?
Yes, she definitely has, that's for sure. And like I said, she came through it well, but I mean, to know that yes, she is a dog, but they feel, and they feel deeply. Like, I mean, there were nights, like on those hard days of things, where she would just get so sick to her stomach. Like, I mean, we'd have to give her medication because she's like throwing up. Like, I mean, it really upset her. Like, she just, I mean, she was struggling. Like, it was a lot for our entire family, like, yeah, to go through.
Yeah.
You know? And so for her to feel that so deeply, like I said, I had to give her the grace and the space as well to grieve, because she was grieving too.
Yeah. These dogs can be such a powerful force in life. And you both have told your story so beautifully. I feel like I know both of your dogs, and I'm so glad that you have them and that they can provide such relief and peace of mind for each of you in different ways. And I thank you so much for giving us your energy today and talking about the background of your dog and how you trained them and what today has been like with you and your dog. And I think it's just incredible. And hopefully there are listeners out there that are more intrigued by the idea of getting a service animal now that they've heard from each of you. So Jen, April, thank you both so much for being here and for telling your stories and for letting us get to know your dogs.
Thank you for joining us. I encourage you to browse other Energy in Action podcast episodes. I am so inspired by the resilience of those in previous episodes, and I know you will be too.